From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden. It is the second night, and the big event is, of course, Congressman Paul Ryan's big speech. It will be his debut tonight as the GOP's vice presidential candidate. Now at the podium, live in Tampa, is Senator Rob Portman of Ohio. He was a media favorite for the vice presidential pick this time around. Let's listen to him now, Senator Rob Portman.
When it comes to understanding our economy, let's begin by talking about something the Democrats love to demonize, Mitt Romney's success in the private sector. He built a company from the ground up, created lots of jobs, and yes, he made money. He made it the old-fashioned way, folks. He earned it. Then you have Barack Obama, who never started a business, never even worked in business, and yet he claims those who have should give credit to the government or someone else for their success. So you have one candidate who understands that success comes from working hard, competing, and taking risks, and you have another candidate who believes that success comes from government. Let me ask you this. Which one do you think knows how to turn around this economy? Right answer. Let me ask you this. Which one would you choose to invest your life savings? Should it be any different for safeguarding our nation's economy? Or let's say you don't have any savings. Let's say you're worried about how to pay September's rent or mortgage. Let's say you're one of the millions of Americans out of work, or millions more who have given up looking for work. You've got to be running out of patience and hope. You've got to be tired, looking for a new start. Well, you don't have to be patient any longer. Through your vote this fall, you can change the leadership of this country and the opportunities for you and your family. America, it's been nearly 4 years of 8% unemployment, double-digit unemployment for young people, Hispanics, African Americans. 4 years. FDR and Truman won an entire world war in 4 years. America is tired of waiting. Listen, in business, if you don't move rapidly, what happens? You're out of business. You're finished. We want a president who operates at business speed, not government speed. President Obama says that he deserves re-election because his economic policies have worked. Not in this universe, they haven't. In fact, the experts tell us that if we don't change our policies, we're going back into recession next year. Folks, tens of millions of Americans are not out of the last recession. Governor Romney had a plan to build his business. He now has a detailed plan to restore our economy and strengthen the middle class. I ask you, where's the president's economic plan? Blaming others does not qualify as a plan. Now, the president did submit a budget. It was so bad, folks, that not a single Republican or a single Democrat in the entire United States Congress would vote for it. He got zero votes. That is a failure of leadership. President Obama has been right about at least one prediction he's made about the economy. He said, if I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition. I think you're right about that, Mr. President. It hasn't worked because you cannot spend your way, regulate your way, tax your way, or blame your way out of the economic mess that we're in. You have to liberate the productive power of the American people through policies that encourage innovation, risk-taking, investment, and jobs. And you have to compete and win in the global economy. Governor Romney understands this. In contrast, President Obama is the first president in 75 years, Democrat or Republican, who hasn't even sought the ability to negotiate export agreements and open markets overseas. Now, why is this important? Because 95% of the world's consumers live outside of our borders, and to create jobs, our workers and our farmers need to sell more of what we make to those people. While this administration has been dragging its feet, other countries have been busy negotiating hundreds of new trade agreements to benefit their workers, their farmers, taking away our opportunities. President Obama has been so driven to advance his big government ideology that he has abandoned the daily work that a government must do to open markets, restore business confidence, and create the climate for job growth. This is the work President Romney would begin on day one. Take trade with China. China manipulates its currency, giving it an unfair trade advantage. So why doesn't the president do something about it? I'll tell you one reason. President Obama could not run up his record trillion-dollar deficits if the Chinese didn't buy our bonds to finance them. Folks, we are as beholden to China for bonds as we are to the Middle East for oil. This will end under Mitt Romney. We need to knock down these barriers to trade abroad. But we also need to knock down self-imposed barriers to success right here at home. We need to reform our outdated and complicated tax code. We need to fix our burdensome regulatory system. And we need an energy policy that encourages the development of our resources right here in the ground in America. America has a choice between Mitt Romney, who seeks to grow the economy, and Barack Obama, who seeks to redistribute it. Which one do you think will liberate America's entrepreneurial spirit? At the other party's convention, you're going to hear another chant. Their chant will be, four more years, four more years. Folks, we cannot afford four more years. How about no more years? Governor Romney chose a terrific partner in Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Paul's a close friend, a great family man, and he's got a reformer's heart. Contrast this to Joe Biden. Vice President Biden has told people out of work to, quote, just hang in there. So much for hope and change. Paul Ryan is not asking America to continue to hang in there. He's proposing new policies that will give poor and middle-class families opportunities and hope for the future. Mitt Romney made his mark turning around businesses, solving problems. Paul Ryan made his mark as a respected reformer, focused on results. Together, they will do what President Obama has not done. They will lead in breaking through the partisan gridlock in Washington, D.C. America, give them the chance to restore America's economy and restore the American dream. I've seen that dream up close. When I was a kid, my dad left his job as a salesman for a big company and started his own business, taking a risk. He sold forklift trucks. My mom was the bookkeeper. She had to borrow money. They had to borrow money from her uncle because the bank wouldn't give him a loan. He lost money the first few years, but he never lost his dream. By the time he retired and my brother took over, the business had 200 employees. 200 families in Southwest Ohio were supported by that business. This is the classic American story, not of government telling us what to do, but of free men and free women willing to work hard and take a risk to build something of value for themselves, their families, and their community. About a year into the Obama administration, I asked my dad whether he would do it again. He said, "Rob, with all the uncertainty out there today, I don't know if I would take the risk." In that one sentence, folks, he summed up what I've heard from hundreds of small business owners all across Ohio and around this great country. They're afraid to make the investment, and jobs are the casualty. Ladies and gentlemen, we need new leadership and new policies to bring back the dream and renew America's promise. No more excuses, no more blaming others, no more waiting. We need Romney Ryan, and we need them now. And with your help, it's going to happen. Thank you, and God bless our great country.
And that was Ohio Senator Rob Portman speaking there. He touted Mitt Romney's business credentials over President Obama's. He criticized the president on everything from his budget plan to trade policy. He said Mitt Romney was more prepared to improve the economy and would liberate America's entrepreneurial spirit. Both Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan have been spending a lot of time in Virginia this year. It is, of course, one of the most important states on the electoral map. And joining me now from Tampa is Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. Welcome to you.
Thanks. Always nice to be on NPR.
Well, President Obama carried Virginia 4 years ago. It was the first time a Democratic presidential candidate had won your state since Lyndon Johnson in 1964.
Right.
But then the next year, you won the governorship by more than 15 points. So what changed?
President Obama ran a very good, uplifting campaign in 2008, twice as much money as John McCain. But I think more importantly, an inspiring message of hope and another path to prosperity for people, brought in a lot of new voters and young voters, and gave people hope that things were going to change. But unfortunately, over the last couple of years, in fact, in the last first year, people realized that it wasn't a message that was really producing results. And at the end of the day, that's what people want, government to work. And so I capitalized that on that in 2009, running for governor, talked about jobs and the economy and reforming government and fixing roads and schools. And that was obviously what people really cared about, especially the independent voters, and we won by 18. And I think that's why Mitt Romney's got a great chance to win now in Virginia. He was 8 points down 5 months ago. It's now a dead heat. Independent voters in the last poll breaking anywhere from 7 to 10 points for Romney. So I see Romney winning in a close election because there's more enthusiasm right now on the Republican side than the Democratic side.
So a very close poll there. Now, what do you think Romney and Ryan need to do to get beyond the dead heat and deliver Virginia this fall?
I think what will make a difference, we are more organized on the ground with our activists that are making the phone calls, sending out the emails, putting up the signs, making the phone calls. I've seen more of that this year, honestly, than 20 years in office because of the enthusiasm and, frankly, the resources we've got to build up the grassroots organization. I think there's two things that need to be done at this convention in the last 60 days in Virginia. One is making sure people know what a good, decent, warm, kind and generous guy Mitt Romney is. I thought Ann Remy did a brilliant job last night telling the story of her husband, their love, and what a what an honorable and good person that he is, family man, grandfather. And then secondly is the sharp contrast between the ideas for economic growth for the middle class that Mitt Romney's got and the record of Barack Obama. And while he made decent promises, just hasn't delivered. 42 months, over 8% unemployment, $16 trillion in debt and growing, no energy plan, gas prices doubling. This is not a good record to be able to run on. And I think that's the two punch that's going to take place over the convention and the last 2 months and why he'll win Virginia.
All right. Finally, very briefly, you have a tight Senate race there in Virginia.
Yes.
Former Governor Tim Kaine is a Democrat running against former Senator George Allen, the Republican. What about the chances of Republicans taking back the Senate?
I think that's going to break the same way the presidential race is. I don't see a lot of crossover votes given the differences in the candidates between the presidential and the Senate candidates. Although the differences, Allen and Kaine are both known quantities, both been governors, both good campaigners, personable people. But I see that's a dead heat, been a dead heat probably for 6 months now. Again, I think because of Romney's strength and Allen's aggressiveness on the trail, I see Allen winning in a close race as well.
All right, Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, thank you so much.
Great to be on. Thank you.
And I'm back now with NPR's Ron Elving and national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Both of them are in Tampa. Welcome, Mara and Ron.
Nice to be here.
Hey. Mara, Governor McDonnell just talked about how Virginia can go Republican. Is that seen likely? Is it still a toss-up?
Oh, it's a toss-up. It's a battleground state, and it's a state President Obama would really like to win. He doesn't absolutely have to have it. Mitt Romney, I think, has to have it. But it's certainly part of, you know, one of his paths to 270 votes. He urged his own former DNC chair, Tim Kaine, the former governor of Virginia, to run for Senate there. I think they're hoping for some positive synergy that Obama will help Kaine and Kaine will help Obama. And I do agree with the governor that it'll probably go the same way. Not a lot of ticket splitters there. Whoever wins the presidential election will probably win the Senate.
All right. Ron Elving, just a moment left. But tonight seems like a parade of almost VPs. Rob Portman was one of the many people we're hearing from who might have been picked as vice president but wasn't. Why not? Why not him? Why not Tim Pawlenty?
Well, I think in the end, Mitt Romney seems to have decided he needed someone a little younger, a little greater contrast to himself, both in terms of profile and in terms of politics. And as we will hear later on tonight, Paul Ryan is a man who is more of the Jack Kemp school and maybe a more direct inheritor of Ronald Reagan than any of the other people that you mentioned. I'm sure they would all, of course, pay respects to Ronald Reagan and respects to Jack Kemp, but they don't really embrace all of the economic politics and social politics of those two figures. Paul Ryan does.
All right. Well, Governor Tim Pawlenty will be coming up soon. Stick with us. You're listening to special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News.
Support for NPR's election coverage comes from Nissan, featuring the redesigned Nissan Altima with 38 miles per gallon highway. Nissan, innovation that excites. From the Principal Financial Group, managing investments and working to help build dreams for more than 130 years. The Principal at dreamagain.com. And from America's Natural Gas Alliance, supplying domestic energy while working to protect the environment. Learn more at anga.us. This is NPR.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden. It is VP night in Tampa. Excitement is slowly building as we work toward Congressman Paul Ryan's big moment. And with the second night of this convention comes a new theme. We can change it is the motto of the night. The reference is to President Obama's 2008 campaign slogan, which famously promised change. Joining me now from Tampa, Jeff Brady on the floor of the convention hall there with, I believe, the West Virginia delegation. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. I am with the West Virginia delegation, and there is definitely something that they want to change, and they've found a way to demonstrate that. I'm standing with Cindy Fritch. She's from Morgantown, West Virginia, and she's running for the West Virginia House of Delegates. Tell me what you're wearing here. You've got a hat on.
I'm wearing a black miner's hat. It looks like a hard hat, construction hat right now. This is mine safety tested. It is black because only experienced miners wear black underground, and we are trying to represent the hardworking men and women who work in the coal mines in West Virginia. A beginning coal miner would wear a red hat and management would wear white, and we are wearing black hats. We have stickers on the hat. I have a WVU sticker here because I love WVU, but I also have a Friends of Coal sticker, Phillips Machine Company. They make machine equipment for underground. Consol Energy, America's Energy starts here. Coal keeps the lights on, and a Maloney for West Virginia Governor sticker.
Well, and I see you've even got the little bracelet here, sort of the Live Strong style bracelet that says Friends of Coal. So I know we've heard a little bit about the coal industry going through some rough times. What's happening?
Well, we've lost 2,300 jobs, coal mining jobs in West Virginia this year. And I know that ancillary businesses are having a lot of trouble. So there are communities all over the state that are suffering greatly. Families that are suffering because of providers lost their job because of Obama's war on coal. And it's even impacting my prosperous area around WVU up in Morgantown and Montague County. We're having mines close there as well. This is very serious, and that's why we, as the West Virginia delegation to the Republican National Convention, decided to wear these miner hats to communicate to the nation and the world that West Virginia's coal keeps the lights on, but we have to be able to mine that coal in order to provide energy to keep you warm in the winter, cool in the summer, and to allow manufacturing jobs to be here in the country. We need to be able to burn West Virginia coal in the power plants here instead of having to maybe export it to China, where they'll burn it and it'll be much less clean.
So when you say the war on coal, I think you're talking about stricter environmental regulations there.
I am referring to Obama's war on coal. I know the cap and trade legislation did not pass the Congress at the federal level. So instead, Obama and his administration have implemented some of their own regulations through their agencies, which are definitely impacting the coal industry in America. And West Virginia is a Democrat state, Democrat-controlled state, and the legislature and the governor have passed their own regulations on coal that have been negatively impacting the industry as well. And it's a real struggle for families that, you know, I don't know, they're having a difficult time finding jobs. It's impacting whole communities.
We certainly do hear that. Now, it's not just environmental regulations that are affecting the coal industry, though, right? There's a new competitor out there, a new kid on the block in natural gas that's really cheap right now, and a lot of electricity plants are converting to that.
That's true that natural gas is a great resource. It burns clean, and we have the Marcellus Shale in West Virginia, which is now a potential boon for our economy. But we also have had regulations on the gas industry. Actually, in my community, there was actually a moratorium on drilling gas. We do have a great resource, and it is impacting the coal industry. But the combination of the regulations against coal, you know, combined with natural gas, are a very serious impediment to American families putting bread on the table.
All right, thank you. That's Cindy Fritch, and she is running for the West Virginia House of Delegates. very concerned about the future of the coal industry down here in the West Virginia delegation. Back up to you.
Jeff Brady, thank you so much. Now, still from Tampa, we have NPR's Ron Elving and Mara Liasson. Mara, we just heard a lot there about President Obama's so-called war on coal and its impact there in West Virginia. Energy policy is a very major difference between these two candidates. Can you...
It's a major difference, and it's recently been stressed by Mitt Romney, and they see energy policy as a way to get those Hillary Clinton Democrats, you might call them, in not just in West Virginia, but in Pennsylvania and particularly Ohio. Top Romney strategist said the other day, for any voter in coal country to vote for Obama, it's like a chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. And they think this is one of the wedge issues they can separate voters who might have voted in the past for Democrats, but will vote for Mitt Romney. So
the other day, the other day, I just had C-SPAN on in the car radio, and I heard a President Obama campaign ad in Ohio touting the jobs he's created from increased coal production.
Right. And I think that he's battling for those same voters, and it's an important issue in certain areas. These are white working class mining communities, and these are people who should naturally be with Mitt Romney anyway, just culturally. And he does do very well with the white working class, white non-college voters. But they are really stressing energy policy as a way to get at these voters in important swing states, particularly Ohio. Although for some time, I think the Romney campaign had high hopes about Pennsylvania. But so far, Pennsylvania hasn't gotten into that toss-up category.
All right. Ron Elving, do you expect to hear much more about energy policy from both these men?
Yes, indeed. And the regulations that are referred to sometimes rather generically that have to do with the production of energy are sometimes related to the environmental effects of using that particular kind of energy, the production of acid rain and so on from some fossil fuels. Other times they are related to the operation of the mines and the operation of the oil rigs and the operation of the various different kinds of energy extraction industry, so that some of these regulations are imposed not necessarily to restrain the use of a particular kind of energy, but to restrain the natural tendency of some of these industries to cut back on some of the costs of safety in the mines, safety on the rigs, some of the things that have emerged when we've had disasters in the mines, including in West Virginia, when miners have died, and it's been shown later on that that was because various devices were disconnected and because the enforcement of regulations had been too lax. The regulations themselves have often been shown to be important to saving the lives and the health of the people who work in those extraction industries.
All right. Well, I guess we will look forward to hearing more about both sides on views on that issue. NPR's Ron Elving and Mara Liasson, thank you so much. We'll come back to you later. Right now, we're going down to the floor of the convention hall in Tampa. NPR's Brian Naylor is there. Hi, Brian. Tell us who you're with.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm with Steve Perkins. That's right?
That's correct.
And he's a delegate from Minnesota. Where are you from, sir?
I'm from southwestern Minnesota. It's a little town called Laverne.
And we're waiting for former Governor Tim Pawlenty to address the convention tonight. He was one of those that was thought to be maybe in the running to be Mitt Romney's running mate. A little disappointed in Minnesota that didn't happen?
He certainly was our first choice to be the running mate, but we're very happy with Paul Ryan, too, even though he is a darn Packer fan.
Now, Minnesota is traditionally a pretty strong blue state, pretty strong presidential, Democratic-leaning presidential state. Do you think Mitt Romney is going to be able to reverse that tide, at least turn it a little bit purple this year?
Well, there's a lot of energy out there to change things. I also happen to be a presidential elector, so I'm hoping to be one of the first in Minnesota since 1972 to be able to vote for President Romney and a Vice President Ryan. So.
You say that there's a lot of enthusiasm. How do you see that manifesting?
I mean, I've gotten out, I worked in the party, and as you go into small areas and stuff, I mean, you really find that a lot of people are upset out there.
Upset about the economy?
Yes, the economy and jobs, and just nothing has happened. I mean, what Obama had promised isn't occurring anymore.
Thank you very much, Minnesota Delegate Steve Perkins. And now on the podium, we have Tim Pawlenty.
Four years ago, we came together for this convention back in my home state of Minnesota. And a lot's happened since then. We've had 4 years of Barack Obama in the White House. Ah, the Obama White House. One bad decision follows another. It's hard to say exactly just what his worst mistake has been. There's so many to choose from. The stimulus, his energy policy, Obamacare, taxes, Joe Biden. Now, I hear Joe's particularly interested in tonight's proceedings. He even thought about coming here to Tampa, and he's taking notes. Because when Paul Ryan speaks, Joe will finally get to hear what a real vice president sounds like. But you know, President Obama isn't as bad as people say. He's actually worse. The president takes more vacations than that guy on the bizarre food show. And I'll give Barack Obama credit for creating jobs these last 4 years, for golf caddies. Actually, Barack Obama is the first president to create more excuses than jobs. In his view, it's Georgia's fault. It's the bank's fault. It's Europe's fault. It's the weather's fault. It's Congress's fault. Mr. President, if you want to find fault, I suggest you look in the mirror. I've come to realize that Barack Obama is the tattoo president. Like a big tattoo, it seemed cool when we were young. But later on, that decision doesn't look so good. And you wonder, what was I thinking? But the worst part is, you're going to have to explain it to your kids. Next week, Barack Obama will plead with America to give his failed policies and ideas another chance. He's asking Americans to give him more time and more money. Well, sorry, Mr. President, but you're out of time and we're out of money.
We're listening to former Governor of Minnesota Tim Pawlenty. This is live coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention.
Barack Obama's failed us. But look, it's understandable. A lot of people fail at their first job. Now, our opponents claim to be the party of the middle class, but Democrats don't understand this fundamental point. It's really hard for people to be part of the middle class if they don't have a job. Now, I know a bit about these things. I grew up in a meatpacking town. For much of his life, my dad was a truck driver. My mom was a homemaker. She died when I was 16 years old. And my dad lost his job not long after that. I was the only one of five kids in our family who had a chance to go to college. When I traveled the country these past few years, I met Americans from all different walks of life. If you ask middle-class Americans about their hopes and their dreams, they'll share their heart, but also their concerns. Can they pay the mortgage? Will they have enough money to buy groceries or put gas in the car? Will they be able to get their kids into college or pay the tuition? But jobs don't come from politicians. They come from the entrepreneurs, the inventors, the innovators, and the risk takers. America's entrepreneurs know taxes are too high and regulations are too costly and complex. Obamacare frightens them, and they want more American energy. And they're collectively making one common plea. They're saying, I want to grow my business and employ people, but they're also saying this: just get the government off my back. We need to let them know that help's on the way, and help's name is Mitt Romney. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the best candidate. This isn't his first job or the first time he's been a leader who's produced results. He's made a success of failing companies. He made a success of the Olympics. He even made government in Massachusetts more effective and efficient. And now he's ready to help get America back on track and Americans back to work. He has a plan to strengthen and grow America's middle class with lower taxes, a government that works for the American people instead of dashing their hopes and dreams, lowering energy prices, and greater access to quality education for all. But there's one other thing that I want to leave you with tonight. It's important for America to know that Mitt Romney is not only a great leader, he's also a remarkable person. He's smart, gracious, and wise. And he has this infectious good cheer about him, something I appreciate and something America needs. Mitt Romney never quits moving. When he sees a problem, he goes after it and finds the solution. It's that can-do spirit combined with a lifetime of service and success that convinced me to support him. And it's that can-do spirit that we need in the White House leading America now. As a former governor, I know that leadership takes optimism, but not blind optimism. We need a leader who understands the depth of our challenges, but who also doesn't shy away from them. Mitt Romney knows what our problems are, and he has the tools and the experience and the energy and the right policies to fix them. After 4 years of this president, we need Mitt Romney now more than ever. I'm proud to be supporting him for President of the United States, and I know you are too. And with any luck, in a few months, Barack Obama will at last get some experience in the private sector. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America. Good night.
And that was Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota. He was, of course, on the short list for Mr. Romney's vice presidential pick, also for John McCain's pick 4 years ago. He also ran against Mitt Romney for the Republican presidential nomination, but then dropped out after he failed to win the Iowa straw poll in 2011. Tim Pawlenty said that President Obama has failed the country and Mitt Romney would get America back on track. Now we are going to hear from Mike Huckabee. He's the former governor of Arkansas and another Republican presidential candidate from 2008. Here is Mike Huckabee.
And that's when they will unanimously nominate Mitt Romney to be the next president of the United States of America. I want to say that Tampa has been a wonderful and hospitable city, and I'm grateful for all that they've done for us. But the only hitch in an otherwise perfect week was the awful noise coming from the hotel room next door to mine. Turns out it was just Debbie Wasserman Schultz practicing her speech for the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte next week. Bless her heart. 4 years ago, Mitt Romney and I were opponents. We still are. But we're not opposing each other. No, we are mutual opponents of the miserably failed experiments that have put this country in a downward spiral. The United States of America was originally an experiment, but it was an experiment in recognizing God-given individual liberty and creating a government in which no one is deemed better than another, and in which all of us are equal. Not equal in abilities, but equal in intrinsic worth and value. It is the essence, not just of who we are, but what we are. Now, let me just say to those who question how once rivals can be now united, it's quite simple. We have Barack Obama to thank. It was Barack Obama who said, "You didn't build it." Translation, it doesn't belong to you. Well, no small differences among us in our party approximate the vast differences between the liberty-limiting, radical left-wing, anti-business, reckless spending, tax-hiking party of Barack Obama, Harry Reid, and Nancy Pelosi versus an energized America who knows we can do better. For 4 years, we've given a chance to a man with very limited experience in governing, no experience in business whatsoever, and since taking office, mostly an interest in campaigning, blaming, and aiming excuses at his predecessor, the Republicans, and people in business, or as Republicans like to call them, employers. We've stagnated into an economy that has taken all that hope right down the slope and has left millions without jobs, forced out of their homes by foreclosure, herded into dependency upon a government that promises us candy but gives us cavities. Barack Obama seems intent on enrolling more people on food stamps. Mitt Romney's focus is going to be on generating more jobs that will make food stamps unnecessary for them. We know full well we can do better. Mitt Romney turned around companies that were on the skids. He turned around a scandal-ridden Olympics that was deep in the red into a high point of profit and patriotic pride. And he turned around a very liberal state when he erased a deficit and replaced it with a surplus. Do you remember when Barack Obama said that if he couldn't turn things around in 3 years, it'd be a one-term proposition? Well, it's been almost 4 years. I say let's make him a proposition he can't refuse. Let's vote him out. I understand that the job of president is admittedly tougher than running a company, an Olympic contest, or a Commonwealth. But when one sees what even Bill Clinton noted was a sterling record of problem solving that has marked the life of Mitt Romney, we are confident that we will do better. I am thrilled to say Mitt Romney has been loyal to his lovely wife, who knocked it out of the park last night in this arena. He's been loyal to his sons, to his country, to his employees, and to his church. Well, I'm sure now that the press is going to tell you he isn't perfect. But my friends, for the past 4 years, we've tried the one that the press thought was perfect, and that hasn't worked out all that well for us. That's why tonight I tell you, we can do better. Our founding fathers left taxation and tyranny, seeking religious liberty and a society of meritocracy rather than aristocracy. What they created was a bold experiment in government, believing that God gave us unalienable rights and that the role of government is simply to make sure that those rights are protected. So fearful were they that the government would grow beyond their intention, that even after crafting our magnificent Constitution, they said, we can do even better. They added amendments. We call them the Bill of Rights. Those Bill of Rights limit what the government can do, and they guarantee what we, the people, have the unimpeded right to do, whether to speak, assemble, worship, pray, publish, or even refuse intrusions into our homes. Many of those founders died to pass on that heritage. They had lived under the boot of big government, and what they said was, we can do better. As a kid growing up in a household, my dad never finished high school. I grew up in a family in which no male upstream from me had ever finished high school, much less gone to college. But I was taught that even though there was nothing I could do about what was behind me, I could change everything about what was in front of me. My working poor parents told me that I could do better. They taught me I was as good as anybody else. And it never occurred to them to tell me that I could just rest comfortably and wait for good old Uncle Sugar to feed me, lead me, and then bleed me. They told me to get off my backside, work hard, take risks, and treat people honestly and honorably. And look at me today. I've become, as the press like to label me, a failed candidate. Oh, it's true, I have fallen from the high perch of politics, and now I wallow in the mud of the media. But I still know that as a country, we can do better. And with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, we will do better.
We're listening to former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, part of live special coverage of the Republican National Convention.
I want to clear the air about something that has been said. People wonder whether guys like me, an evangelical, would only support a fellow evangelical. Well, my friends, I want to tell you something. Of the four people on the two tickets, the only self-professed evangelical is Barack Obama. And he supports changing the definition of marriage, believes that human life is disposable and expendable at any time in the womb, even beyond the womb. And he tells people of faith that they have to bow their knees to the God of government and violate their faith and conscience in order to comply with what he calls health care. Friends, I know we can do better. Let me say it as clearly as possible that the attack on my Catholic brothers and sisters is an attack on me. The Democrats have brought back that old dance, the limbo, to see how low they can go in attempting to limit our ability to practice our faith. But this isn't a battle about contraceptives and Catholics, but about conscience and the Creator. Let me say to you tonight, I care far less as to where Mitt Romney takes his family to church than I do about where he takes this country. Joe Biden said, show me your budget, and I'll tell you what you value. Well, in the Senate, Joe's party hasn't produced a budget in 3 years. What does that say about their values? And by the way, speaking of budgets, Joe Biden's budget shows that while he wants to be very generous with your money through higher taxes and government spending, for years he gave less than 0.2% of his own money to charity. He just wants you to give the government more so he and the Democrats can feel better about themselves. Mitt Romney has given over 16% of his income to church and charity. And my friend, I feel a lot better about having a president who will give generously of his own money instead of mine or yours. My concern is not Barack Obama's past, but my concern is for the future. Not his future, but for the future of my grandchildren, little Chandler and Scarlett. And under this president, we have burdened each of them with tens of thousands of dollars of debt and a system that will collapse upon itself because he thinks that we can prosper by punishing productivity and rewarding reckless irresponsibility. The Democrats say we ought to give Barack Obama credit for trying. Folks, that sounds like the nonsense of giving every kid a trophy for showing up. Let's be clear. We're talking about leading the country, not playing on a third-grade soccer team. Look, I realize this is a man who got a Nobel Peace Prize for what he would potentially do. But in the real world, you get the prize for producing something, not just promising something. Sometimes we get so close to the picture, we really can't see it clearly. I've had the privilege of working with Bono for the past few years in the One campaign to fight AIDS and hunger and disease around the world. Bono is an Irishman and a great humanitarian. And I remember him telling me of his admiration for America. He said, America's more than just a country. We're an idea. And he reminded me that we are an exceptional nation with an extraordinary history who owes it to the generations who are coming after us to leave them with an extraordinary legacy. But if we don't change the direction of our nation now, our bequest will be nothing but an extraordinary shame. But dear friends, we can do better. President Obama is out of gas, and Americans are out of patience, and our great republic is almost out of time. It's time that we no longer lead from behind, but that we get off our behinds and leave something lasting for those who came after us instead of a mountain of debt and a pile of excuses. Tonight, it's not because we're Republicans, it's because we are Americans. That we proudly stand with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, and we say, we will do better. God bless you. Thank you. God bless.
And that was former Governor of Arkansas Mike Huckabee. Talking about how we can do better, his theme, he criticized Mr. Obama's lack of experience in governing and in business and criticized a range of his policy issues. We are going to the floor of the Tampa Convention now. NPR's Jeff Brady is there. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, I'm with the Iowa delegation, and I'm sitting with Margaret Stahldorf. She's from Red Oak, Iowa. And in 2008, when Governor Huckabee won the primary in Iowa, you were a supporter of his, right?
Absolutely.
And what his big theme tonight, he really embraced that we can do better theme. And at one point he said about Governor Romney and his religion, he said, I care less about where Mitt Romney takes his family to church than where he takes this country. And you really like that comment.
I really like that comment because it is important where it's important that we go to church. It's important that Governor Romney takes his family to church. Where that church is of little importance. Where he takes this country after January 20th next year is important to all of us.
And why was it important to hear that comment from Mike Huckabee?
Because he embraces the Lord. He is everything that we think of in a faith-based life. He loves his Lord, and he's not afraid to speak about it.
And have you ever had any reservations about Mitt Romney's religion?
Absolutely not.
I guess if you had any, Mike Huckabee would have assuaged them.
We know that Mitt Romney believes in God, and that's what's important.
And we have a lot of cheers there in Tampa. The first female African-American Secretary of State is on the stage. Condoleezza Rice is next up. She's a real rock star in the Republican Party and incidentally broke another barrier this month, becoming one of the first two women admitted to the Augusta National Golf Club, home of the Masters. Condoleezza Rice now on stage in Tampa at the Republican National Convention.
Thank you so much. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening, distinguished delegates. Good evening, fellow Republicans. Good evening, my fellow Americans. We gather here at a time of significance and challenge. This young century has been a difficult one. I can remember as if it were yesterday when my young assistant came into my office at the White House to say that a plane had hit the World Trade Center, and then a second plane, and then a third plane, the Pentagon. And later we would learn that a plane had crashed into a field in Pennsylvania, driven into the ground by brave souls who died so that others might live. From that day on, our sense of vulnerability and our concepts of security were never the same again. Then in 2008, the global financial and economic crisis would stun us. And it still reverberates as we deal with unemployment and economic uncertainty and bad policies that cast a pall over an American economy and recovery that is desperately needed at home and abroad. And we have seen that the desire for liberty and freedom is indeed universal as men and women in the Middle East rise up to seize it. Yet the promise of the Arab Spring is engulfed in uncertainty. Internal strife and hostile neighbors are challenging the young, fragile democracy of Iraq. Dictators in Iran and Syria butcher their people and threaten regional security. Russia and China prevent a response. And everyone asks, where does America stand? Indeed, that is the question of the hour. Where does America stand? You see, when friends or foes alike don't know the answer to that question unambiguously and clearly, the world is likely to be a more dangerous and chaotic place. Since World War II, the United States has had an answer to that question. We stand for free peoples and free markets. We will defend and support them. We will sustain a balance of power that favors freedom. Now, to be sure, the burdens of leadership have been heavy. I know, as you do, the sacrifice of Americans, especially the sacrifice of many of our bravest in the ultimate sacrifice. But our armed forces are the sure shield and foundation of liberty, and we are so fortunate that we have men and women in uniform who volunteer. They volunteer to defend us at the front lines of freedom, and we owe them our eternal gratitude. know, too, that it has not always been easy, though it has been rewarding, to speak for those who would otherwise not have a voice. The religious dissident in China, the democracy advocate in Venezuela, the political prisoner in Iran. It has been hard to muster the resources to support fledgling democracies and to intervene on behalf of the most desperate. The AIDS orphan in Uganda, the refugee fleeing Zimbabwe, the young woman who has been trafficked into the sex trade in Southeast Asia. It has been hard. Yet this assistance, together with the compassionate work of private charities, people of conscience and people of faith, has shown the soul of our country. And I know, too, that there is a weariness. I know that it feels as if we have carried these burdens long enough. But we can only know that there is no choice, because one of two things will happen if we don't lead. Either no one will lead and there will be chaos, or someone will fill the vacuum who does not share our values. My fellow Americans, we do not have a choice. We cannot be reluctant to lead, and you cannot lead from behind.
We're listening to former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice at the 2012 Republican National Convention.
Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan understand this reality. Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. They know what to do. They know that our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes, can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength. Our military capability and our technological advantage will be safe in Mitt Romney's hands. We must work for an open global economy and pursue free and fair trade to grow our exports and our influence abroad. If you are worried about the rise of China, just consider this. The United States has ratified only 3 trade agreements in the last few years, and those were negotiated in the Bush administration. China has signed 15 free trade agreements and is in the progress of negotiating as many as 18 more. Sadly, we are abandoning the field of free and fair trade, and it will come back to haunt us. We must not allow the chance to attain energy independence to slip from our grasp. We are blessed with the gift of oil and gas resources here in North America, and we must develop them. We can develop them sensitively, we can develop them securing our environment, but we must develop them. And we have the ingenuity to develop alternative sources of energy, too. But most importantly, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan will rebuild the foundation of our strength, the American economy, stimulating private sector growth and stimulating small business entrepreneurship. When the world looks at us today, they see an American government that cannot live within its means. They see an American government that continues to borrow money that will mortgage the future of generations to come. The world knows that when a nation loses control of its finances, it eventually loses control of its destiny. That is not the America that has inspired people to follow our lead. all, when the world looks to America, they look to us because we are the most successful economic and political experiment in human history. That is the true basis of American exceptionalism. You see, the essence of America, what really unites us, is not nationality or ethnicity or religion. It is an idea. And what an idea it is. That you can come from humble circumstances and you can do great things. That it does not matter where you came from, it matters where you are going. Americans, ours has never been a narrative of grievance and entitlement. We have never believed that I am doing poorly because you are doing well. We have never been jealous of one another and never envious of each other's successes.
This is live special coverage of the Republican National Convention from NPR News. We're listening to former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice.
No, ours has been a belief in opportunity, and it has been a constant struggle, long and hard, up and down, to try to extend the benefits of the American dream to all. But that American ideal is indeed endangered today. There is no country, no, not even a rising China, that can do more harm to us than we can do to ourselves if we do not do the hard work before us here at home. More than at any other time in history, greatness is built on mobilizing human potential and ambition. We have always done that better than any country in the world. People have come here from all over because they have believed our creed of opportunity and limitless horizons. They have come here from the world's most impoverished nations just to make a decent wage. And they have come here from advanced societies as engineers and scientists to fuel the knowledge-based revolution in the Silicon Valley of California, in the Research Triangle of North Carolina, along Route 128 in Massachusetts, in Austin, Texas, and across this great land. Continue to welcome the world's most ambitious people to be a part of us. In that way, we stay young and optimistic and determined. We need immigration laws that protect our borders, meet our economic needs, and yet show that we are a compassionate nation of immigrants. We have been successful, too, because Americans have known that one's status at birth is not a permanent condition. Americans have believed that you might not be able to control your circumstances, but you can control your response to your circumstances. And your greatest ally in controlling your response to your circumstances has been a quality education. But today, when I can look at your zip code and I can tell whether you're going to get a good education, can I honestly say it doesn't matter where you came from, it matters where you're going? The crisis in K-12 education is a threat to the very fabric of who we are. My mom was a teacher. I respect the profession. We need great teachers, not poor ones and not mediocre ones. We have to have high standards for our kids because self-esteem comes from achievement, not from lax standards and false praise. And we need to give parents greater choice, particularly poor parents, whose kids, very often minorities, are trapped in failing neighborhood schools. This is the civil rights issue of our day. If we do anything less, we condemn generations to joblessness and hopelessness and life on the government dole. If we do anything less, we will endanger our global imperatives for competitiveness. And if we do anything less, we will tear apart the fabric of who we are and cement the turn toward entitlement and grievance. Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan will rebuild us at home, and they will help us lead abroad. They will provide an answer to the question, where does America stand? The challenge is real, and the times are hard. But America has met and overcome hard challenges before. Whenever you find yourself doubting us, just think about all those times that America made the impossible seem inevitable in retrospect. Our revolutionary founding against the greatest military power of the time, a civil war, brother against brother, hundreds of thousands dead on both sides, but we emerged a more perfect union. A second founding when impatient patriots were determined to overcome the birth defect of slavery and the scourge of segregation. A long struggle against communism, with the Soviet Union eventually in collapse and Europe whole, free, and at peace. And in the aftermath of 9/11, the willingness to take really hard, hard decisions that secured us and prevented the follow-on attack that everybody thought preordained. And on a personal note, a little girl grows up in Jim Crow Birmingham, the segregated city of the South where her parents can't take her to a movie theater or to a restaurant. But they have her absolutely convinced that even if she can't have a hamburger at the Woolworth's lunch counter, she could be president of the United States if she wanted to be, and she becomes the Secretary of State. America has a way of making the impossible seem inevitable in retrospect, but we know it was never inevitable. It took leadership, and it took courage, and it took belief in our values. Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan have the integrity and the experience and the vision to lead us. They know who we are. They know who we want to be. They know who we are in the world and what we offer. That is why this is a moment and an election of consequence, because it just has to be that the freest and most compassionate country on the face of the earth will continue to be the most powerful and a beacon for prosperity and liberty across the world. God bless you, and God bless this extraordinary country, this exceptional country, the United States of America.